I end up taking a bunch of classes that have semester-long classes that have the same time periods during first and fourth quarters. So I'll end up having different classmates, but it will be the same class, and the curriculum will start off right where it left off at the end of first quarter. And then, let's see, so we'll put my teachers in contact with each other pretty early in the year, usually in September, October, and then we'll send up the coursework. And a lot of times when I get up there, the teachers already know what's going on, and sometimes I have to facilitate a little little conversation, but it works out really well. Like, it wouldn't be possible without all the help at Westboro.
Welcome to Castle Corner Podcast, and thank you for joining us. I am your host, Tommy Castle. With me this week is Westboro senior Calman Himes. I hope I said that right, Calman. I think I did. As Calman was nice enough to drive all the way down from Killington, Vermont today to join me here before heading back to Westboro High School for class on Monday. So, Calman, thanks so much for joining Castle Corner Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tommy. It's great to be here.
Well, Calman here is fresh off a trip to Sweden, where he was one of 8 skiers and one of 4 men to represent the United States in the Freestyle Junior World Championships. Now, I am such a noob when it comes to skiing, and I'm going to say that over and over again, so I'm going to let Calman do most of the talking here, but the Freestyle Junior World Championships in Sweden is where Calman competed in the mogul events for skiing, and like I said before, I'm a noob, so he's going to tell us all about moguls in a second. I can't speak much about skiing, and it's kind of funny because I go on a trip every year to Smuggler's Notch, Vermont in February with a bunch of my high school friends, and I do not ski. I've been every year, so I'll ski this year, and I just don't do it. So it's ironic, I know. So like I said, I'm going to let Calman explain all the skiing stuff. So Calman, let's jump right into it. What exactly is moguls, and what do you do?
Well, moguls is one of the disciplines of freestyle skiing, which is a slightly broader spectrum that includes both moguls and aerial skiing. So what I do is mogul skiing. I guess it's easiest to explain moguls using the scoring system. So moguls, it consists of a section about 250 meters of moguls split between 2 jumps. So basically 60% of the score of moguls is based off your turns. So it's how well you absorb the mogul, which is basically a bump of snow ranging from 1 foot to 2 feet high.
They look pretty big and tough. So like we were watching videos before we get on air here, and you're trying to split those kind of hills to try not to get too bumpy, right? I mean, that's obviously you want to avoid the highest point of the hill. So go on with the moguls, though.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't want to get too high up on, we call it the face or the front side of the mogul. So you don't want to get too high up on that, because then you won't be able to reach your full absorption, which is how high your knees come up, how much you bend your knees. Also, what you're getting judged on is the angulation of your knees, which is how your knees bend from side to side, and then your carve of your turn, which is related to that angulation, and then also how calm you can keep your upper body. So you don't want to have, I guess, a lot of movement, a lot of rocking back and forth or head bobbing. It's more of like they're looking for fluidity in this.
So you want to look like a mummy or someone, you know, a skeleton, basically, when you're skiing. You want to be as stiff and as upright as possible, or are they looking for maybe a little movement?
Yeah, like a little, not necessarily too stiff, just like a little fluidity, kind of like we like to call it like a little dance, I guess. You know, it's supposed to look, it's a judge sport, so it's a lot about how it looks and the appearance of the sport.
So like a dance, like Mambo Number 5, Electric Slide.
Exactly.
I'm thinking like Weekend at Bernie's here. It's like the very old movie that you probably don't know, but the guy's pretty much dead, and they just carry around for a couple days or years. I don't even remember. But anyway, that's what I'm picturing in my head. So maybe is that what you kind of just do, a little dance back and forth and try to avoid getting too upright? Is that kind of basically the gist of it all? All
yeah,
right, good.
Good.
I know I'm not doing the justice right now. Yeah. So keep going. So you said 60% is about the moguls, right?
Yep.
And that's about 200 yards?
About that distance. And then in between those moguls, there are 2 jumps. So these jumps are about 2 feet tall, but we'll take those jumps. We'll be going about 20 miles per hour heading into the bottom air, a little bit slower heading into the top air. And we'll go off those jumps, and we'll do a back full to a back layout. So a back full is a full twisting backflip, and I'll land that and go back into the moguls, and that that's judged based off of the degree of difficulty and the execution of the jump. So through some mathematics, it's you get a score based on that, and that's 20% of your score, those two jumps combined.
So we got 20% for the acrobatic aerial kind of assaults, 60% for the mogul, and there's another 20% I feel like I've just missed there.
Yeah, the 20% is the time. So it's how fast you can do the mogul course. There's a baseline time. We call it the pace time. I think it's around 10 meters per second. And you do that. It's based off of how fast you do the course, and you'll be awarded a score based off that, and you'll add those three scores together for a maximum score of 100. Usually the winning scores will be in the 80 to 85 range, or maybe sometimes a little lower, sometimes a little higher. But that's basically how the scoring system in moguls works.
Thank you very much. That's a really good explanation. I know I would not have gotten anywhere close to that, but so 60-20-20, a mixture between how well you do with your technique on the moguls, 20% for kind of how fast, but not too fast, not too slow, and then 20% for your tricks, and the calculator comes out at that point. And all rounds up to 100. So have you ever got 100 a perfect score? Is that possible?
It's never been done before. In the current system, it might be... I think it's impossible in this current system.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
So in bowling, you can bowl 300. Everyone can do it. It's just You got to get there. And I'm trying to think of other sports with perfect things. I mean, you can still throw a perfect game in baseball.
Exactly.
But you're telling me you can't pitch a perfect game in mogul skiing? That's ridiculous.
No, you're striving for perfection. It's almost never attainable. That's actually one of my favorite parts about the sport, though, is that there's never the coveted run. There's always room to improve some aspect of the run, whether you can go a little faster, or you turn a little bit. Or you have one less break, which is if your knees come apart when you're mogul skiing, that's a little deduction in the score. So if you have one less of those, your score will increase. So there's always room for improvement in a run.
Yeah, I guess I can compare it to golf a little bit. You're not going to shoot an 18 in golf. It's not possible. And the coveted 59 is pretty much the highest you can get there. So maybe that's like an 85 for mogul skiing.
Yeah.
Anyway, trying to relate to what I know. So we'll get back to skiing here. You were just over in Duvden or something like that.
Duved, yeah. <It's
close. laughs> Sweden. And you represent the good old US of A there one of the four male skiers. So how did you do over there individually and maybe as a team?
So we came over there. We had some ambitious goals. Can't say it went completely to plan, but that's mogul skiing. I ended up coming away with two finishes, right around 20th place. I think it was 21st in the single moguls and 19th in the duels. But we had some great USA finishes. One of the girls had a great finish. I believe it was a top six finish. One of the guys also had a great finish. So it was, overall, it was a very tough competition. It was great to see some of the kids I'll be competing against in the upcoming years. And it was impressive. It was cool to be there.
Now, Swedish people are known to have very blonde hair and blue eyes, right? Is that something you saw over there when you were in the girl of Sweden?
I could say so. Yeah, we actually have a girl on my team who... It looks very Swedish, so we tease her about that sometimes.
Must have been fun being overseas with them. But you're used to kind of a unique schedule and way of life. You've been balancing your time between skiing and schoolwork by splitting time between the Killington Mountain School in Vermont and then Westboro High School, obviously here in Massachusetts, since you're an eighth grader. So what do you do at Killington that helps you maybe become a better skier? And what's a normal day like up there?
A normal day at Killington, so we'll usually get to the school at around 7:30 in the morning. This is if it's a full day. Sometimes it'll be closer to 9. But we'll get there at 7:30. We'll do a trampoline session, or we will do a little activation workout, and then we'll have breakfast at the school, and then we'll head up the 5-minute drive to the ski area, and we'll train from 9 to noon. And we'll drive back down, have lunch, do a little workout from 12:30 to 2, or maybe another trampoline session, depending on the day. and then we will go to school from 2 to 6 at night.
That baffles me. So you guys do all this fun stuff for the day, and obviously it's a lot of training, and a lot, working out isn't always the most fun, but obviously helping you become a better skier. And then after that for, you know, almost 8 hours, you're going right into schoolwork for 4 hours. That's I would think that would flip that, but I don't know. How does that work for you?
It's tough. I'm a fan of the way the current schedule works out. We do only have classes 3 to 4 times a week, each class 3 to 4 times a week. Just because it's very individualized, most of the classes are 1-to-1 or 3-to-1. So it's unlike the 19 or 20 kids in Westboro. But that works out because we get to focus on the strengths and weaknesses, and it helps the classes move quicker. So there are those benefits. But it can be tiring. So when 6 o'clock rolls around, you feel it.
Well, I'm sure you go to bed pretty much after dinner, but I thought I had a busy schedule, but it sounds like you take the cake on that one. But let's give you and us a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll get more into how we got into skiing in the first place.
This is Castle's Corner.
Back here with Westboro senior Kalman Himes. Kalman qualified for his trip to Sweden by finishing third out of U.S. skiers under the age of 20, right? So I get that right.
Yep.
In the North American tour events this past season. It included stops in competitions at Killington, which he does pretty well in Vermont, Park City, Utah, as well as events in Calgary and Quebec in Canada. So I'll attach the full write-up and story on Kalman and his endeavors that my coworker Sandy wrote a little while back to our podcast article, so you guys can check that out. But Kalman, we just brushed over your busy skiing schedule and splitting time between two schools. So I'm interested to hear what some of those challenges are, whether it's schoolwork or finding time to sleep or make friends, or and maybe what are some of the benefits of splitting time between two very different schools.
Sure. The challenges. Schoolwork has always been somewhat of a challenge. I've been lucky to have some great resources in Westboro. Mr. Lefebvre and Mr. Kelly and the principals of Westboro High School have been incredible. We've been meeting with them long in advance before the season even rolls around, like usually in August, and we'll pick out a schedule that will work. So I end up taking a bunch of classes that have semester-long classes that have the same time periods during first and fourth quarters. So I'll end up having different classmates, but it will be the same class, and the curriculum will start off right where I left off at the end of first quarter. And then, let's see, so we'll put my teachers in contact with each other pretty early in the year, usually in September, October, and then we'll send up the coursework. And a lot of times when I get up there, the teachers already know what's going on, and sometimes I have to facilitate a little little conversation, but it works out really well. Like it wouldn't be possible without all the help at Westboro.
So you spend kind of either semester or quarter, whatever you want to call it, ones and four, so the beginning and end of the school year at Westboro, and then you kind of sandwich the middle over at Killington.
Yep.
Obviously, right. Probably the prime ideal time to be up there is, you know, end of the fall and winter into the winter and early springs, right? The ideal skiing conditions.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So that makes sense. And what also makes sense is off air, you told me your parents actually met at Killington Mountain, which is pretty ironic. And that you've been skiing since you were just 3 years old. So I guess it's fair to say that you were pretty much born to ski, right?
Yeah, you could say that. They put me in the program at a really early age. I went into the Mini Stars program, which is the really youth program that's a Killington Mountain program. When I was, I think, 5 or 6, we moved up to the ski club, which was a big deal back then. I was actually in a junior racing program when I was in the ski club. So it's ski racing, I think Lindsey Vonn or Michaela Schifrin. It's a funny story. I would always end up on the side of the trails, hitting like the little jumps, going inside out of the trees, and my coaches would always yell at me, and I would get in trouble. And eventually, I was able to get out of that program, and they stuck me in the freestyle program. And I did a lot of jumping around back in those days, but eventually found my way in the freestyle program and worked my way up through there. And into the B program, which is the under 12 program, and then into the A program, which is basically what I'm in now, the A program combined with the Kellings Mountain School program.
A lot of jumping around, which is kind of something I wanted to get into with you, is the moguls and people might think of like a little hill that they're skiing through and trying to avoid the high knees and too much move of the body, but then they do flips. So at two times they, you know, or tricks or aerial assaults. And I'll try to attach the videos of kind of examples so people can see it with their own eyes. But that's a big part of your skiing and kind of what you're interested in, right? So can you tell us a little bit about where you practice these acrobatic moves in the air and how you've kind of try to perfect those as you get older?
Yeah. So we start learning about acrobatics at a really young age. I was on the trampoline training when I was 8 or 9 years old. And eventually we learn these tricks on the trampoline and the body positions and how they're supposed to feel. And then we take them to the water ramps in Lake Placid, which is, it's a really cool facility. It's like a wooden structure. It's a ramp. It goes down into a jump and it has a plastic over surface that skis are able to ski on top of with like not too much friction. So we'll actually do this with all our ski gear on, our skis, boots, helmets, and we'll put a wetsuit on, we'll take our poles out there and we'll ski down this and we'll do tricks off it 20 times a session, 2 times a day. So that's how we learn the tricks and we take that to snow.
Do you ever like get like coerced into maybe doing like a belly flop, like, or like a full face flop or whatever you want to call it for your jumps, or like is that like not allowed for those kind of antics?
We'll mess around on there a bit. The EMTs don't love it when we do too much stupid stuff, but so well, there's this jump called the double jump, which is for the other component of freestyle skiing, aerial skiing, which I don't do. But it's a big jump. It's probably 20 plus feet off the ground. And you do two flips off it. And I did it over the summer, did a 1.5 straight to my face. Hmm. So that felt good. I was able to go back up and, land the double flip right after. But yeah, it's a lot of fun sometimes.
All right. Well, we might have to take a road trip to Lake Placid then at some point, because I know we'd love to get some photos of that and videos if possible for maybe an upcoming feature that I've been kind of supporting and boosting here on the podcast. But Kalman here has decided that he would like to write for the Player's Perspective as well, giving a nice first-person kind of viewpoint on skiing and mogul skiing and his kind of experiences across the United States, Canada, and Europe. So definitely be on the lookout for that in the upcoming months. Speaking of the upcoming months, Kalman, you graduate from Westboro in June, and then you plan to take a gap year at Killington before moving on to the University of Michigan. I should tell you, I'm an Ohio State Buckeye football fan, so I know Michigan's a great school, but I'll leave it at that. So can you tell us about what the decision-making went into taking a gap year and what you hope to maybe accomplish with it?
Sure. So gap years are actually, they're not that common, I'd say, in Westboro, but in the skiing, especially the mogul skiing world, they're pretty common. It's basically a way of figuring out like how the training will go. So basically, like throughout high school, I've been balancing the mogul skiing along with high school and switching schools. So this way, I'll be able to fully focus on mogul skiing without those outside distractions. So it's really a way to test like my ability and see how far I can go.
So that way, you can become next Lindsay Vonn.
Hopefully,
although she's retiring, so she's not. So it's Michaela.
Michaela Schifrin.
Yeah, she's a new real deal. About guys or men? What are the new hot shots for USA skiing and mogul skiing?
We got some young guys on the team. We have a kid from who's originally skied at Mount Snow, skied at Killington for a year. He represented the U.S. in the Olympics this year. But really, it's been the Canadians who've been dominating in recent years. There's a guy named Mikhail Kingsbury. He just won the Olympic gold medal, and he's won the most World Cups out of anyone ever. So He's the real deal, that guy.
I gotta apologize again for my noviceness and newbiness to all the skiing. So I appreciate you being here. I'd be remiss not to ask you a lot of names around here. What's your origin? Kind of your family? Obviously, an interesting name with Kalman Himes. What's that? Nativity or where's that origins from?
Actually, it's funny. The Kalman is Russian. That's from my great grandfather, and the Himes was actually shortened by my dad. By my grandfather. As it was originally Heimowitz, it was a German name, and he shortened it I think he was around 30 years old, and that's how Himes came to be.
Nice. I guess it was nice back in the day when you can shorten names when you're coming over from country to country. They can't really do that anymore, I don't think, but maybe you can. Anyway, let's take a quick time out here before breaking away from kind of skiing and the pizza and french fries that I do on the mountain, and at least... we'll talk a little bit more about what makes Kalman Kalman.
This is Castle's Corner.
All right, back here on Castle's Corner. I keep saying Kalman instead of Kalman. It's Kalman, not Kalman, because the last name's throwing me in there, the Himes. So Kalman. I just got to say it with a C, right? I apologize again with the names. Running joke here through the Castle Corner podcast is I can't ever get a name right for three in a row. And once again, this happens. So two for three again. I can't say I'm sorry, but I will say I'm sorry. So back here with Kalman Himes of Westboro High School. Kalman, you told me off air that you went to a summer trampoline camp called Freestyle America as a kid. And now you're a coach, as you coach acrobatics at the camp in Waterville, New Hampshire. What's that like? And it kind of sounds like a pretty fun camp, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a great camp. So the head coach and the founder of the camp, his name is Nick Preston. He's actually known as the grandfather, he's a founding father of freestyle skiing, I'm not sure. He's one of the original freestyle skiers. And he started the camp in 1983, so it's one of the oldest freestyle camps in the country. I'll coach there. I have friends who I've been going to this camp with since I was 9 years old. We still coach. We all coach together. It's a great time. And we'll coach the kids our ages. It's around 9 to 13 years old, like somewhere around there. But it's a great time. We teach them acrobatic tricks, flips, twists, and just really get them to love the sport.
Now, I brought a kid in from Hopedale, Brian Soreau. He was on the football team in the first defensive play of the game last year. He broke his neck, but now he's back. He's fully healthy. He's playing lacrosse for the Hopedale boys lacrosse team. How do you go about making sure no one gets hurt seriously like that when you're doing all these tricks and stuff like that on trampolines?
We have a lot of safety precautions. We're on the trampolines. We have pads around the trampolines, and these, actually, I have to add, these aren't like typical backyard black bed trampolines. These are, they're white bed or yellow bed, so they're an Olympic trampoline. They can bounce probably two or three times higher than your typical black bed. So there's a lot more room for error, but we have pads around. It's a really organized, structure that we have the kids do. It's the same process I learned, actually. So we do bed tricks, which are the C drop or the back drop. So really small heights. Then we'll take them up into progressions for tricks, and then eventually up into a backflip and even farther if they get there. But we'll use a throw pad, which is a little pad that we throw. It's really soft, so if they do happen to land in an awkward way, it won't hopefully lead to an injury.
Yeah, I'd probably be in the C drop, the Z drop, if I had to guess a drop that I'd start in with. I'll hopefully make my way up to like the X, Y, or drop, whatever. But jumping and landing isn't kind of your only athletic endeavor, though. You played lacrosse at Westboro your first few years of high school before unfortunately missing the deadline this past spring and season to register through the MIAA. But you're still helping out with the team, the boys lacrosse team. And I hear you even help your younger sister, Danny, who is the goalie on the Westboro girls lacrosse team. So how do you go about helping maybe both the boys and girls lacrosse teams right now?
Yeah, so I guess my my dad jokes about it. We call it the practice squad, like the one-man practice squad. But yeah, I'll play with Westboro during practices, and then I get to be on the sideline during the game, so just cheer everyone on. So it's great. We're getting better every game. We're doing so much better than last year already. I've only been here for 2 weeks, but yeah, it's really cool to see. And then the girls team, my sister just picked up a goalie this past year, and she's really gotten into it. I actually helped her pick up a few skills in the backyard, just throwing balls at her head, which she usually saves, so you know, but yeah, it's fun. You know, I get to help out with both teams, and it's a way to get involved when I get back.
Yeah, for sure. So you just got back recently then?
Yeah, just 2 weeks ago.
And that was from your trip from Sweden?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it might have been longer, but great, yeah. So you're not rocking too bad of the sunglasses tan, goggles tan from your trip over there. It might have been a little cloudy or something, but usually you get worse sunburn in the clouds. Anyway, you told me that you are a big Dave Matthews fan, and I hear you recently made a purchase to one day maybe become the next Dave if skiing doesn't work out for you. What did you buy, and how's that going for you?
I bought a little acoustic guitar. I'm not good at it, I got to be honest, but I got a lot of time this summer coming up, so that's my goal, is to figure it out. I'm basically teaching myself online, watching YouTube videos. I'm still really far in the learning stages, but give you a little update on it as the progresses.
It's funny, you're not the first person that she brought in, the kid from Bellingham named Michael Reisfelder a couple of weeks ago, and he told me the same exact thing. He's picking it up. I don't think it was DMB for him. I think it was Florida Georgia Line, if I remember correctly, for a little bit for country music fans out there. And I think maybe in the next year I'll have enough kids and people interested in starting up their own instruments that I'll have a couple bands that we can put together, and we'll just have a school of rock sesh. I'll be the Jack Black, and everyone else can kind of be part of the fun. But you've obviously had a lot of fun so far in your high school career. It's coming to an end soon with at least Westboro, as your graduation's in June, and then you'll be heading right up to Killington and making some stops over the border this summer in Canada, so it should be a busy but fun summer for you. So good luck, definitely don't break a leg, and thanks again for coming on Castle Corner Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Tommy.
I also want to thank my producer Kaylin Kelleher as well for all her help behind the scenes. You can also follow me on Twitter at TommyCastle44, Tommy Castle, not Cassell, although I say last names incorrectly and first names incorrectly for everyone else. You can also follow our Metro West Sports and department with our photos and stories on both Twitter and Instagram at Metro West Sports. You can subscribe to Castle Corner Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. We'll also check in every week for new Castle Corner. Thanks again for joining me here on Castle Corner Podcast. And until next time, I'm Tommy Castle, and thanks for checking in.